Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, which is Parent Teacher Talk Day, and it's July the 28th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and we are delighted and honored to be with everyone who joins us every day that you join us as we share this ancient understanding from the Aramaic and combine it with modern science, modern physics, modern psychology, bringing everything together into a picture of, well, here's how we change the game on planet Earth. Well, why would anybody want to change the game? Well, fortunately or unfortunately, you don't have to look very far to see why the game needs to be changed. Some pretty bizarre things. There was a post on Facebook the other day about hitting children and how a court had held at this man who, I don't remember whether they used the word beat, but spanked, hit his child, and child services had, you know, brought charges, and how the court said it was fully justified. And, of course, the teaching, as we've talked about before on parent-teacher talk, is that the child certainly learns a powerful lesson, and that is if you're bigger and you're stronger and you can beat somebody into submission, that's a great way to run your life. And we're here to offer some alternatives to that kind of thinking and to recognize that that word discipline, as opposed to meaning, as our culture kind of teaches it, being properly beat up, actually means being properly taught. And I think we've got Suzanne with us today. Suzanne, are you with us, young lady?
I am here. Yes, hi.
Awesome. Delighted. Welcome.
Thank you.
We've put you on the show for the last little while. We're delighted that you're able to join us. And my understanding is with your family coming into the airport, you're going to be with us for at least the first half of the show, and we're going to see how the rest goes. So do you have any immediate thoughts to share with us or anything on that Facebook post? I don't know if you saw that or not, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Yes, and as family life is, the curveball is they just got in town from Washington, D.C., and so I might flip-flop and do the last half of the show while I greet them here at the airport. They got in early. Can you imagine?
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. But, yes, my thoughts on it, you know, we've been having a real active dialogue on My Mind Manual about spanking, about that very thing. And, you know, what it goes back to is when we bring it, the research, 98% conclusive that we are not modifying behavior with spanking. You know, these are some of the things people, beyond the lack of love of spanking, that we see people think that it's an effective behavior modification tool. And that's the approach I like to start with first is what does the research say? And, you know, 98% conclusive evidence, and we know that it is not, you know, supportive to our child learning, but research also tells us that. And that's where I like to bring it back. But what happens with the conversation is it tends to go to, well, I was hit and it served me well. So it comes right back to personal experience and we're not able to have a conversation about the what is the research and what is examined or looked at. It goes right back to their own personal experience, which isn't a big surprise. You know, my mom's a lovely person. I'm a lovely person. I am well served by having been spanked. And other people don't have that recollection. They know right off that it was not to their highest and best. But I would love your thoughts about that, because I think it's an interesting dynamic that people bring it back to their very experiences and really can't talk about it from the research.
Well, if you look at the comment, that at least the comment that I most often hear is, well, it never hurt me. And yet you see people who are self-medicating with alcohol and junk food. They're on psychotropic drugs. They're 50 pounds overweight. Their bodies are falling apart, and they have no clue that it's those early childhood conclusions about themselves, about life, about parenting that are running the degeneration of their whole process. And there's just no link. There's no connection. We've cut ourselves off so deeply. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's such a focused use. I don't remember the number, but, you know, the huge, huge number of people on antidepressants, like just, and the numbers are skyrocketing. And my input to the person who says, it never hurt me, is, well, take a look at what's happening in your world. It hurt you deeply, and you don't know it yet. And when people start doing their work, the pain they go back to, the trauma they go back to of being hit by the person who's supposed to be their caretaker and love them, is monumental when people will do the work that it takes to get in touch with that, deal with it, and process it, and in many cases be able to go back to the parent who's still living and talk about it and clean it up. It's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. And that is my sense of why it is such a core issue. People get very defensive about it right off, of wanting to defend their memory, the goodness of their memory of their parent, or the goodness of their memory of their childhood. And it's very easy to go blind right in that moment and just get so angry. They go to sometimes anger and hostility. If you look at My Mom Emanuel on the last Facebook page, generally that's where the conversation ends up going on the other side. Actually, I would say on both sides. It's a very heated topic, even for the people wanting to educate and defend other options or positive parenting. It can be a big trigger for them as well, because many of them were hit as children, and it's a trigger issue. So what we keep wanting to do is just elevate the conversation to respect and love, and just being able to love each other and not, you know, I just wrote a post that it's going to go live tomorrow, and I start by saying if you spank your child, three things. One, it's likely that you and I would really love each other and get along. If we met, we'd have a lot to share, and we'd have more in common than we don't. I think it's such a polarizing topic. People put each other on other sides of fences, and it's important that we stay with love and acceptance, even if there's an action that we think is unacceptable. If we want to bring about education and transformation, at the root of it has to be an acceptance that this is where that person is right now. That's something that I think would be, just a neat conversation, and I'm hoping that tomorrow's post is a starter for that level of conversation, and just keep bringing it back to the research, and that's sort of where we're going to use as a jumping point. There was a recent article about the effects on the gray matter of the brain with spanking, and they're able to show a decrease from age 1 to 5 with children that are spanked at 1, and age 5, they're going back and doing so it was a longitudinal study, and they're going back at age 5, and they're finding a decrease in the gray matter of the brain that they are linking with lack of self-control. So the irony being the thing that is being done to the child in order to help them theoretically gain self-control is diminishing their ability to actually learn self-control. So when I posted that research, what I got was, "This is bull," was one comment. And when I redirected it, I said, "Well, thanks for weighing in. Why is this bull?" You know, I didn't get any reply. So, you know, and then the other comment is, "Well, in my childhood," and then we, you know, just kept redirecting that as, "Well, you know, I'm sure your parents are lovely people. I'm sure you're a lovely person. This isn't really about that." And so, you know, and this has been up for us of late. It's been really an interesting conversation.
I remember working with a gentleman in Florida a couple of years ago who runs a major AA website. And when I talked to him about the codependence work that we do and pointed out the three behaviors that people are limited to until they resolve these childhood issues, and that depending on the stress they're under, number one, their behavior is going to be whatever they did to get along with their power person when there's no stress. When stress starts to build, they'll do whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. And when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. This gentleman had been an alcoholic and had been free of alcohol for 30 years, protested and said, "No, that's not true. I was horribly abused and beaten by my father, and I never touched my son." And he was, you know, stood quite staunchly on that, quite proudly. And in the next moment, I could have pushed him over with a feather because I said, "Yes, I hear that, and I congratulate you for having the discipline and the control to keep from beating your children. And how much time do you still spend?" You know, his children are adults now, but the question was, "How much time do you still spend today having to control your fists?" Could have knocked him over with a feather because he still fights the battle of refraining. Still hasn't dealt with it internally. And sadly, if that energetic principle is going on inside of a parent's mind, in order to impact the child, it doesn't actually have to become physical contact. Certainly a whole other level if it is physical contact, but if it's just happening in the mind of the parent and the parent is restraining themselves, the impact on the relationship and on the child is still very dramatic. And sooner or later, it has to be embraced and cleaned out of the culture. And you know, that's what the real work is all about. In order to get the post that you're about to do tomorrow, if you could tell us how people can do that so that they can tap in and continue the conversation, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. If you go to mymommymanual.com, MyMommyManual, mymommymanual.com, it's on the home page. And if you sign up there on My Mommy Manual, you will receive emails periodically, ranging between once a week to once a month, with new material that will come to your inbox. The other way would be to go to Facebook, join /MyMommyManual, and be in the conversation on Facebook.
Cool, and if I remember correctly, if people do sign up on your website, they also get another free piece of information. You want to tell us what that's about?
Oh, sure. We have a free gift that is love letters to your child, and you could get this at any age, but it is written to help you share your memories and thoughts from birth to age 10. And so if you have multiple children, it's a download. You could print multiple of these as an illustrated packet that facilitates you journaling to your child, to your unborn child, the story of their birth, and then you know every 3 months for the first year and then every year of their life. A nice ritual to do on their birthday. Write them a little love letter and seal it away. Save it for a special day, maybe graduation from high school. Maybe it's a wedding. And just a neat way to share your early relationship. And what I love about it is who you are to me. A lot of the reflections in the writing are you witnessing the joy and the love and the wonder your child is. And as an adult, I think it's so wonderful to hear stories, you know, from my family, my parents, about our true nature. Who was I, you know, when I was five? And that was the impetus of this piece.
I wonder if you could send me a copy of that. Could you pop that in my email?
Absolutely. It's a PDF, so
I would love to
shoot that right over.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, anything else to share before you go grab your family by the neck and hug them?
Yeah. You know, two things that might be a neat conversation, and I selfishly will love the recording to share on with my families that are coming up in the parenting circles. One is the step of letting go of the attachment to the goal within the worksheet. So here we are, we're triggered, we identify the trigger, we identify the emotion, we identify the thought behind the trigger, we go through the steps, and then we let go of the goal, or what I really want is, and then we let go of that. I would love for you to flesh that out in the who, what, where, when, why, and how that works, because it is such a magic step and such a powerful step. I'd love to hear your words to that, explaining that. And the other would be surrendering to a higher power. I have some participants that are very versed in the 12-step program, and I'm sure you as well have worked with a lot of people that come at this work out of a 12-step program. And when I introduced the idea of being a creative being, co-creating, one particular participant has struggled with that idea. And I have put words to it, but I would love to hear your words towards that, towards the idea. I think what's been causing conflict in her mind is, I don't know the exact AA words, but it is, I surrender to a higher power. And she's struggling with the idea of being powerful. And I interestingly enough, that is the core issue up for her entire family. Everyone is struggling for power. It's a power struggle between her and her husband, self-proclaimed. They're attempting to avoid divorce right now. And they're struggling with a three-year-old who they feel runs the house, who's really searching and seeking out a lot of power behaviors. And then they have an older child, 5, and a younger 11-month-old. And just power issues are up for the whole family. So at that, I will leave it and be very interested in listening, and I will have it on mute, and I will go see my family coming back from Washington, D.C., and check back in probably about 20 till.
Awesome. Awesome. But you will have the space to be listening, because if you'd like, you can hold the conversation on that part until then. If you want to just
I will be listening. However you want to do it, that would be great. I will be listening. So if you wanted to have other things to jump into, that would be great. Either or.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool. All right, Allison. Appreciate you. For those who have not been introduced before, that was Suzanne Tucker, who has written a book called My Mommy Manual, has a website, and is doing parenting classes in St. Louis, Missouri. And we've been connected with her family for the last 20 years or so, and watched the awesome job of parenting and healing as a family. It's just been monumental to be part of that process. So, pretty cool. So, Jeannie, did we have Dr. Tim with us?
We do have Dr. Tim with us, and we also have Julie Haverstick with us.
Awesome. Well, let's say hello to those folks. Julie, let's let you have you go first. How are you, young lady?
I am good. I am good. I'm enjoying our intensive, and I heard your intro with the power person. We certainly have been working on that power person during this intensive, and it's been absolutely fabulous. I'm glad to see Susan back on the radio show, too.
Yes, so are we. Do you have any thoughts to share on the conversation about that Facebook post? By the way, I also, if you have the space before you come to class today, if you can check the email, I sent you an email on tinnitus that you might find interesting. So.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, my tinnitus has been kind of right up there. Okay, great. Thank you. I actually didn't see the Facebook page or didn't really hear that part, so, you know, you have to, okay. I didn't experience it in the very beginning of the show.
All right, well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how the young man be.
He has a mouthful of food, but he's doing well.
Ah, Okay. Lunchtime.
I'm doing very well.
Any thoughts on the earlier conversation? Anything to share with us? Anything on your mind today?
Well, I think Suzanne is showing her intelligence and experience in this issue, and I deeply appreciate her bringing up the point that once an issue polarizes people, we have been conditioned to demonize the other side, to dehumanize the other person. Now, we can see this very easily when we talk about someone from another country or in a war or someone on the other side in a war, but we don't really realize how quickly and effectively we do it in a conversation with somebody who either lives in our own house or lives across the street in our very own culture and country and nation and neighborhood. If they have a different opinion than we do, it becomes me against them, and we get triggered. And so I so appreciated her statements about bringing it back to that space of calm and centered and realizing this is a person that if we weren't talking about this issue, I would probably like this person and they would probably like me. We have so much more in common than we do have in conflict that it isn't even funny. And one of the things that I've told people for years, one of my favorite spiritual teachings is, and my wording to condense it down is simply this, the only real important difference between me and anybody else on the planet, and this includes everything about age, height, weight, gender, etc., education, the only important difference between us as people is the degree to which we realize we're all the same. And if we can go back and reset that point whenever we get triggered into an argument or a discussion, then we actually have a space that's opened where there's the possibility of communication, effective communication. But once I've been triggered and I have anger or fear in my mind, or I'm holding on to the need to prove I'm right, even if I don't realize I'm in anger or fear, there is no possibility for communication. So I really enjoyed that, appreciated her point, and I think, as we've talked about a number of times before, the evidence talks for itself. If we're not going on anecdotal evidence, if we're talking about research, if we're talking about the felt sense in the moment, whether or not to hit your children depends on what you want them to learn. And, you know, the tool that's used to produce a result always produces a result like the tool. So if I teach my children to hit when I'm angry, they will learn to hit when they're angry. So that's my input for today to begin with.
Awesome input. I appreciate the reinforcement. It is absolutely right on track. And, you know, to take it even a step further, I love Einstein's quote where he says, if you think you're separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And all these separations, including literally the visual separation from others, is an optical delusion, something created by our minds and by the thoughts that don't allow us to see our connectedness and the truth, the literal truth that we are one creature. We are cells in one body.
Well, and I love the second part of that quote where he goes on to say, this delusion of separation prompts us to develop a special affection for a few people, objects, and circumstances closest to us. And that creates a prison for us from that restricted affection. And our goal must be to extend that same affection to all people and all of creation. And that's the only way out of that self-created, self-imposed prison.
For sure. And the forgiveness process is part of the removal of those blocks that are created and based in hostility and fear. And getting free from those blocks is such a huge piece of the puzzle, such a huge piece. Themes that you're seeing today to share with us, especially anything as it relates to early childhood or parent-child relationships, parent-teacher relationships?
Well, the theme so far today has been the trauma and the energies that we carry from our very young years. And I've dealt with a 42-year-old and a 57-year-old so far this morning. And the primary dynamics we were dealing with today in their lives today were forged in those power person dynamics you were just talking about. And during traumatic interactions between these people and their power persons. So I think I I think I mentioned either on Thursday or Friday about the real important power of having the ability to cancel the goal. And, you know, Suzanne talked about that. I was part of a team doing presentation on Saturday at a junior college to a bunch of executives, and one of the primary things we wanted to get across in this hour-long presentation was the canceling of the goal and why it's useful. And the full worksheet process is a magnificent tool that brings a depth of release and resolution that very few other tools I've worked with can come close to. And yet the canceling of the goal, which is a core of the worksheet process, can be used on its own, on the fly, when somebody's in a difficult situation or they become triggered. And that's been a theme Wednesday night, Thursday during my sessions then, and then again on Saturday. One of the primary things we wanted to communicate to these people about the core of this work and to give them an experience, a simple little experience about realizing something they're feeling upset about, identify the thought they're using to create that upset, and within that thought, there's a goal that's not getting met or realized. So just take a breath and cancel that goal and watch what happens to your feeling state. Watch what happens to your intellectual capacity. So that would be a theme that you might... You can choose to wait until Suzanne comes back, or you can start talking about it now, but that's really been helping people lately, just to get them started on the process, to get them to do a quick series of steps to identify their upset, the thought that's causing it, and within that thought, identify the goal that's not getting met and breathe into canceling that goal and watch what happens.
It is absolutely amazing, isn't it, when you watch what people get in touch with when they do that, and how it clears the space in the mind for a whole different reality to show up. It's an amazing and genius piece of the puzzle. And I certainly thank Yeshua from 2,000 years ago that he came up with that and gave us that gem. It's monumental in changing the dynamics that happen within the mind, for sure.
And I really like when you introduce the part about it being a key way. So the specific goal that I get in touch with when I have a negative emotion is literally the key way to the specific part of my mind that's creating the upset.
Took me a lot of years of teaching the canceling of the goal to get to understand that one. It took me a lot, well, 30-plus years.
Well, an example just came up today. I had a gentleman come in with a worksheet. And in the worksheet, what he described was the problem is that he does not feel he is worthy to be loved and respected and have friendship. So when he went down to the goal, he created a goal that said he wants to have love and respect and friendship. And he went through the worksheet. This was between sessions. And he went through the worksheet, and he got a certain, you know, little bit of a shift. And so I said to him, when he presented the worksheet in the session, notice the part that you dropped out of the goal. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you said that the problem is that you don't feel worthy to have love, respect, and friendship. And then you set a goal to have love, respect, and friendship, but you didn't set the goal to be worthy to have love, respect, and friendship. So you can go out and strive and achieve these things, but if you still don't feel worthy, this dissatisfaction underneath is going to be churning. So we did the exercise in the session, and he could instantly feel the difference by adding that one word. So instead of canceling the goal to have love, respect, and friendship, he canceled the goal to feel worthy of having love, respect, and friendship, and it took him to a whole different place of associations and energies. It's such a powerful tool.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And the way you phrase that, it really points up the importance, pardon me, the urgency of really, truly, accurately identifying the goal. And in the worksheet process, it's not so much a matter of setting the goal in that moment. It's a matter of identifying the goal that the mind already has that is locking into the upset, the pain, the turmoil. And once I accurately identify, that goal may go back to a totally unconscious space when he was 3 years of age and would not even be something that would be possible to verbalize at three. But it's still there. It's still a goal. And 50 years of trauma and trauma later, setting up a lot of pain and trauma around respect and acceptance and friendship, which would interfere with anyone respecting, accepting, or being friends with him because of that muddled content in the mind, and that's where the goal becomes the keyway. It's the identification of the goal that specifically shows us where in the mind the trauma is held, and the canceling of the goal that opens the space for that trauma data to be accessed. And when we bring it forward, you know, the ancient name of the conscious mind is the alter, A-L-T-E-R. It's where we can alter or change an unconscious dynamic. But as long as it's hidden in the unconscious, can't get to it, can't change it. And by simply identifying, you know, There's a psychotherapeutic model, of course, that says you lay on the couch for 30 years and talk out your problems and look for the deep, dark, dirty thing that happened to you. And chances are you're never going to come across the deep, dark, dirty thing that happened to you. But if you just walk through life with a commitment to live as a human being, and of course our definition of a human being is experiential, holding a newborn child, you need to walk through life as love, and whenever you're feeling something less than love, identify the goal that you've got at that moment, and it'll drop you right into what you were looking for on the couch. It'll just take you right to the core of it. And it's like, again, the genius. How did Yeshua know that 2,000 years ago? I don't know. But it's monumental that he brought that step. And, of course, as I said, it took me 30 years plus to come to understand why and how it worked. You know, when I first started teaching the canceling of goals, it was sort of a haphazard thing. I would present it to a group, and it was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, so what? It's just part of a bunch of other information. And then I'd have people coming back to me saying, wow, I started doing that goal-canceling thing. Man, has that ever changed my life? And that's what really, that feedback is what really had me start to pay attention to it and start to devote myself to teaching it because it made such difference in people's world. And then to really get to the point, over 30 years of working with it, not knowing why it worked, to where now I feel like I have a pretty good handle, a pretty good comprehension of precisely why it works. And when Suzanne comes back on, we'll have that conversation with her. I want to make sure that she has the space to totally focus on hugging her daughter, her husband, if they come back, and then to focus with us on the conversation about the canceling the goal. And by the way, I am going to be, we're just talking about heading to St. Louis when we finish here. So probably September the 14th, we're going to begin a workshop series in St. Louis again. And, of course, the lead workshop will be Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It'll probably be the afternoon of September 14th. So if anybody is listening from the St. Louis area or you know anybody, start prepping them. We don't have flyers on the website for it yet. We just opened the conversation about 30 minutes before the show with Suzanne. And it looks like we're probably going to do it at the university there. And so we'll be doing some healing through relationships and codependence work to present to the students and give them a leg up on this whole process of self-healing. So looking forward to that. If you want to let anybody in St. Louis know, the flyer will be on the website as soon as we get things organized. And also beyond that, of course, we're in the middle of a 16-day codependence to interdependence communication practicum. We're on about day, I don't know, 8 or 9. We finished this workshop on Saturday morning, and Jeannie and I will be heading to St. Louis to take participants back and pick folks up at the airport and come back. And on Monday, we start a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So if somebody is ready to take your work to the next level, you might want to look at your calendar, see if you can make the space. 9 days, we're going to cover in a process-oriented format. We're going to cover why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, purpose, personal power and commitment, empowered to heal, mind shifters, hands-on energy field work, skill point breathing. We'll be doing a personal code evaluation that gives people specific feedback on what areas they can work in to really make their time really worthwhile and work while they're here. And then, of course, at the end of the intensive, there'll be another evaluation that will give them the feedback on how effective their work has been, and a new set of assignments for what's the next layer of my work. Where is it most important? You know, we can look in the area of our relationships with others, our relationship with ourselves, our fear, our anger, our victimhood, our nutrition, our willingness to do things, the flip-flopping mind. So what the evaluation does is it gives specific feedback. What are the top three areas that you can focus yourself and work in this 9-day intensive so that you'll get the most benefit possible? So the tool is just awesome to help us to help people to pinpoint the place where they have the biggest opportunities for growth, and then when the intensive is over, people have a new layer of feedback to look at the next level of what needs to be worked with. So anyone who wants to join us, that intensive will start on Monday. It's going to be a small group, so it's going to be fairly personal and intensive. And if you're interested in doing that, the cost of the whole 9 days for everything, food, accommodations, workshops, workshop materials, everything, is $15.75. If money's a challenge and you've got the space and the time and you want to do it, talk to us. We'll work it out, whatever it takes to make it available. You know, ultimately, I wish we were funded so that we never had to even mention money. And, you know, it takes money to run a center. It takes money to be on the road for 10 months at a time. And so it becomes part of the equation, but it's a secondary part of the equation. So
mm-hmm.
anyone who has a challenge there, we're happy to work with you. Oh, welcome back.
Hi. I've been listening. I didn't know if I was in a queue or not, but I thought I'd just try to talk and see if you heard me. But that was wonderful. What a great worksheet with the distinction about the worthy. That really drove home what I was looking for in the sharing with the group. That's going to be a wonderful example to share.
What happens is that the mind tends to store information in files, so to speak. And the goal is the key way into the file that the mind is using for its current perception. So let's say I'm a three-year-old, and I am, as our conversation was earlier, and the court affirmed, I am worthily being beaten for my behavior. Or maybe this wasn't a three-year-old, it was maybe a five-year-old. I don't recall exactly, but whatever it is. Let's say I am a three-year-old, and mm-hmm. I am experiencing my parents slapping at me, and I'm wondering why this person who says, I love you, I love you, I love you, is welting on my body and inflicting pain on me when what I want them to do is to touch me gently. And, of course, the three-year-old wouldn't say, Mom and Dad, I want you to touch me gently, but that would be the unspoken goal. And 50 years later, when it comes to touch, a person can be touched. I mean, we were in Washington State a couple of months ago doing some workshops, and there was a man there who was in his 60s. And he was coming to the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop. And he would not. He said, you know, you guys do this energy field work stuff. I don't want anybody to touch me. No one. I'll come do that workshop, but as long as no one touches me. And finally, after some conversation and doing a couple of worksheets around being physically abused, there was a space to open and be touched. And one of the major issues in every marriage that he'd been in was the issue of touch and mm-hmm. having been physically abused. And once he was able to cancel that goal, then he opened the space and invited me to do energy field work on him and loved it and enjoyed being touched. But here's the game. If I have in, let's say, a relationship, a goal around being touched, and what's in my mind's file on being touched is pain and trauma, you know, we've reported before the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into perception, into awareness, is 9 bits. Just a very small fraction. What causes the mind to use what data? The goal is the recruiter. Of all the data that's firing in brain cells, literally 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity, the goal, select with data, is going to create perception. And so if the perception is just because someone, I remember one young man who I went over something that I do oftentimes to support people is just rub their shoulders. And I, you know, walked up behind this gentleman and just kind of rubbed his shoulders gently. And he was like, ow, that hurt, There was nothing hurtful in the touch, but it resonated, people touching him and pain and his perception. Literally, physically, in his mind, and in his mind was being hurt by being touched. And the goal recruits that data because that data is there. The key way, that goal being the key way into that data, and it seems so counterintuitive to say, well, wait a minute, you just got me to the point where I finally understand that what I want to do is be touched gently, and now you're telling me to cancel my need to be touched gently. You're insane. Stop it. I'm not going to do that. That's what I want. I deserve that. And my feedback to the person who protests like that, which, of course, I've heard 1,000 times, is, I agree with you, Creator. You do deserve to be touched gently. Why haven't you created it yet? I would offer the reason you haven't created it is because there's a bigger part of your mind that says you can't have it and you don't deserve it. And as long as you don't ever embrace and change that part of your mind, you will never be able to create the kind of touch that you want. So by canceling the goal, what happens is the data that has been recruited into perception by the goal collapses. And at the same time, a pathway is open into that file, so to speak, in the mind, into that particular data. The doorway opens directly into that. And now something that was too painful and not accessible ever in my life, I now have direct access to. And when I can bring it forward to conscious awareness in the presence of love, what happens is, in the presence of love, my pain dissolves. I love what Rumi says, 13th century mystic. Rumi says that in the presence of love, all pain becomes medicine. And literally, the deepest, most traumatic turmoil and pain that people hold in their minds, when they can make the space for it to come forward by the canceling of a goal and the collapsing of perception, the active presence of love dissolves the pain, and it is medicine. So that's the core of why and how the goal is the key way, you know, and the two things that are important is the accurate identification of the goal and then the willingness to cancel the goal so that the data that's been recruited collapses and we have access to the space inside of us where that data, that pain, or that turmoil comes from. And bringing the active presence of love there, that which doesn't belong just begins to dissolve. It's the most amazing thing. So does that make sense of your question in more detail, Suzanne?
Absolutely. And I caught that line you just shared off a prior recording, and you've used it. It was linked on whyagain.org, and you've used it with a caller who was resisting the letting go of the goal, and you explained it with that, I agree with you, you deserve blank. Why haven't you created that? So I picked that one up. That's just a wonderful question back. And you don't have to have the answer then. It goes back to the person who inside themselves find the answer. You know, and then you can share what you said of I would submit that your mind, how did you say that? Your mind is telling you you can't and you don't. Something in your mind.
Yeah, the part of the mind that says I can't have it and I don't deserve it. In fact, it's a gentle touch, like in the case of this one gentleman, when I reached for his shoulders and massaged him in a nurturing way. But his perception was, because in his content was fear and pain about touch, his perception was that a nurturing touch was painful. He couldn't receive what was given, the fact of it was given. And it's amazing how many people discover once they start doing their forgiveness work that the fact of what they've always wanted is right there in front of them, but their perception, the contents of their mind from the past that they were unwilling to access, wouldn't allow them to see it or experience it.
Mm-hmm. And the implications for us as parents with our children is so profound, because it's such a ready audience to receive these projections of you are this, you're causing this in my life. I had a father who was struggling with a 3-year-old who had been given a bike, and his perception was that the child was ungrateful, didn't want to ride the bike. And so we did a worksheet, a talk through without the actual paper, and identified the trigger, the reality, and the goal. And the link back to his own father, and when he let go of the need that he be grateful for the bike and realized that he'd been putting a lot of pressure on his 3-year-old, who's a really physical kid and loves to run and play, and he really was scratching his head. Why doesn't he want to get on the bike? He shifted that, and I just asked him to just let go of the goal of him to ride the bike and just see what happens. Just go ride your bike, you know, and don't pressure him. Don't ask him to ride his bike. And sure enough, you know, when he identified the link back to his own childhood and some pressures he felt to be grateful with his own father, you know, about a week later, his child's on the bike saying, can we go bike riding? And, you know, and with children, it can be that simple. With we as the adults can do the work on our end. as opposed to thinking we have to modify the behavior with some sort of a punishment or teaching. Sometimes the, you know, I would say most of the time, it's on our end. We can do a worksheet.
Well, my favorite comment about children is that having a child is like having your unconscious mind hang out in true living color and Dolby sound, and everything you've never dealt with, they're going to do. And the reason for that is because our children are genetically made of exactly the same material as we are. Literally, every thought, every feeling, every trauma, every turmoil, and there's some interesting research we talked about last week that's showing up where they're going, oh, my God, memories, feelings are being passed from generation to generation, and it's being done in the DNA. They're tracing down and getting down to where the DNA is actually changing its structure with this type of thing. It's like, yeah, well, you know, if you go back 2,000 years ago, there were a group of geneticists that spoke Aramaic, and they said, and of course the word sin in Aramaic means an energy that's off the mark, they said the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations. And then there's a really key line in there. What it says is, and here's the Creator speaking to us as humans, and it says, yea, of those who hate me. At least that's the Greek translation. These were geneticists. This Aramaic language is a genetic language. They knew exactly what they were talking about. But that last addendum, yea, of those who hate me, there's love, the Creator saying, and in Aramaic that word hate is not hate as in a love-hate relationship the way the Greeks have translated it, but rather those who are separated from love. And that instead of being able to turn to the mind of love for our behavior prompts, for our goals, for our purpose, and what takes our lives forward, the person who is separated from that active presence of love, the person who does not have the active presence of love in them, is stuck with the behavior prompts that come from their genes. And for most people, that's hell. Because the hell, I mean, when you think we live in a culture where purposely, and in order to do this, how many people were going rah, 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 and supporting the effort to kill? We've murdered 275 million people on the planet in the last 75 years. Anybody who thinks that hasn't affected the genetics of everybody on the planet better think again. And I'm talking about the people who are alive today, the 2-year-old, the 3-year-old, the 4-year-old, the 5-year-old, have that information in their genes. And when we can access and forgive, we remove those sins of the father, those errors, those energetic offenses of the generations, and we get free. And that, you know, if you go back to the original idea of those scriptures, it was simply, here's how it works, here's how you get free of your own desert. You know, that story, I always like to bring it up because it's such a good reminder of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. And you go, wait a minute, this is a bright group of people. How do you get lost in a 30-square-mile area for 40 years? It's not about being lost in a hot, sandy place. And then you look at the solution that they offered. How did one get out of the desert? They said the old generation, at least, again, the Greeks translated it as the old generation, had to die off. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. It didn't mean that everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die, but that we had to go inside ourselves and forgive, remove the generational influences that kept us doing the same stuff over and over again, feeling the same way as our ancestors did, and literally being lost in the desert. And to get out of that unconscious condition and to raise children consciously, and Suzanne, I acknowledge you for what you're doing, Dr. Tim, Julie. We had MJ Corcoran on last week with us, too. It's just awesome what so many people are doing to bring this forward on the planet, and my heart is in deep appreciation for each and every one of you. So any other thoughts? We're down to about 6 minutes, or maybe we want to take a quick check with Jeannie and see if there's anything happening in the chat room to be aware of, or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue. Jeannie?
Everything's pretty quiet. Julie, Matthews had had her hand up, so I'm going to turn her on. Do you still have a question, Julie, or are you satisfied?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep.
I can.
Oh, good. Great. Okay, well, I do have something. It's a question about resistance, and I've been really looking into my resistance and how hard it is for me to stop doing things. And I notice I have resistance to resistance, and I've been living in the question of what is resistance anyway? Is it just something that naturally exists, and so why resist it? It's just the other side. It's how we hold things in place, and so there may be some things I do want to hold in place, and I want to remove the other things. And so what in electronics, Michael, what's the opposite of resistance?
Well, obviously, a smooth path and an open flow is the opposite, but I would offer that in the context that you're speaking about resistance. What it is thoughts we hold that go against what's being asked of us. So if I'm running along in a particular track and I hate my life and I'm in anger and rage and guilt, but I just keep doing my anger and rage and guilt, and somebody says, well, why don't you try this? Then the resistance comes up. Well, I've always done it this way, you know, and you know, I've always watched my family and they've always done it this way, so I'm just going to keep doing it. So it's changeable thoughts that are going in the opposite direction of what's being presented. So if the request is, well, why don't you try some forgiveness? And the thought is, well, you know, letting people off the hook never worked for me. You know, my parents told me never forgive anybody. They never forgave me, and I'm not going to do it, as though forgiveness has got to do with someone else. So that whole internal dialogue becomes the resistance to the new invitation. And when I choose to forgive, I let go of that internal dialogue, and then it's just, oh, well, it's obvious. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what will take me to the next step.
Oh, well, thank you. That really shed some light for me. Thank you.
Also, in terms of the child, when we're speaking about this, the three-year-old, if the parent, you know, in this story that you told, Suzanne, about the little boy who gets a bike at three and isn't appreciative, doesn't just jump on it and ride away with dad, you can bet that dad had a whole lot of resistance to what his parents tried to get him to do. You know, by the time we get to the age of two, they call it the terrible twos, and it's because there's so much that's being asked of the child that's unnatural to its energy system, and then gets to the teens and people go, well, you know how those teen years are, and it's all got to do with the mind energy that's been planted and the unconsciousness of the fact that forgiveness means that I can remove those things and be free of them. And sometimes to remove them feels like loss and death, because if it's my identity to be in resistance, to let go of that, it's like, ooh, now I'm going into non-existence. So, and that could be a conversation for another time. In the meantime, we're down to the last few seconds, so I'll just say thank you to everyone for joining us. We will be looking forward to Parent Teacher Monday next week. Of course, Aramaic Friday on Friday, and Possibility Wednesday on Wednesday. Bring a Stranger to the show tomorrow. We appreciate everyone who joins us every time you do. Archives are on the website. Have the best year yet of eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world and bring a stranger with you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.